EBE, Ole, talking. Plasma ship, telepathy, contact, Ivana Podhoryshchya and Alona Podhoryshchya. 27th October 2018, 5. Peter Anthony Finn, screenwriter. It appears that some starships can shrink in size, conversely expand in size. Is this true, and is it done telepathically? Answer from EBE. We have got our technology to create information into our fields, crops. We're sending robotic spears to this task. So small orbs are also expanding to enlarge the ship in the shape of our original ship. We do this by using formulas, our program, information imprinted into crop circles, into fields. This is how we can program contraction and expansion of our ship. Our orbs and ships are changing. Everything is in one computer in this direction. Telepathy is on different bases for development. The energy and using plasma, every ship during impact, landing and entering above your atmosphere, under atmosphere. Every ship changes itself, its program in the computer, and changes its plasma as to be stable as possible, and possibly to change its shape to a smaller axial track, a larger axial track. Every plasmatic part of the ship has driven his axis to rise about the surface. On the surface, our ship can turn off plasma to the lowest frequency to keep the stability prevalence on the way back. Everything is controlled by the program. Plasma and by us, so we can accomplish and achieve what we have to achieve. We use telepathy between themselves. We sound like young Falcon. For people, this sound is unusual. We reduce Hertz below 21 and young Falcon as if it was its sound. 21 Hertz is unpleasant to human ear. You've been listening to EBE talking. Year 51. A5 UFO encounter of Diana Falks. While in her early 20s, in the mid-1960s, typist Diana Falks would witness two UFO sightings. Each occurred as she drove along the A5 near her home in Shrewsbury, Shropshire, in the United Kingdom. What's more, as it all come to light later, another local resident had similar encounters at the same spot. The area of these bizarre and mysterious events on the A5 is only widely, relatively speaking, a stone's throw away from RAF Cosford, the site of the most well-known and most credible UFO encounters in UK history. As the report of Diana Falls was brought to light by a larger community, UFO community, by a UFO researcher and author, Nick Redfern. During his time working in his native United Kingdom, he came across the account of the National Archive, the governing body behind the report. Prospect and Security Services were based at controversial Rydell Manor at the time of the incident, a place of apparent secrecy and cover-ups of many UFO and conspiracy circles. A bright circular object on the Mertford Bridge, as he was driving an A5 road towards a family home from Shrewsbury, 20-year-old Diana Falks, with witness events of fascinated and elderly. It was around 2 a.m. she was approaching the Mertford Bridge, which stretched over the River Severn. Suddenly the entire area was light around and lit up. The source of this sudden glow of light was a circular object, which was almost directly overhead. She watched the object for only a second or two late before fear and adrenaline kicked in. She pressed down hard on the accelerator, now in a hurry to reach her own destination. To alarm, brightly lit object followed her. It remained at some height and distance, but all the while it casually pursued her vehicle. When she finally arrived home, she ran for the car and alerted her parents. Both of her mother and father witnessed a strange disc-shaped craft from the garden of their home. The craft made no sound of any kind and glowed on pale yellow colour. After 30 minutes, it rapidly began to get smaller and smaller. So he did so, began to change to orange-red glow, till finally it was gone. All three witnesses were soon the object was speeding away from them. Both Dan and the parents were largely keep the sighting to themselves. A similar report occurred. Episode occurred. They would seek advice from the military. Razor lights administered to electric shock sensation. Almost exactly 2 years later, on the 8th of November, 1966, Dinan would encounter what seemed to be the same craft. What's more, the encounter would take place at almost the same spot as previously. Just prior to midnight, she neared the same bridge, a glowing round craft appeared in the sky overhead. This time, however, it was much lower to the ground than before. Dinan would report that she could see a laser light emanating from the airborne vehicle, as she had before, though somewhat calmer. She continued her journey home. As before, the object followed her, maintaining the same distance throughout, at least initially. After 7 minutes, a strange craft suddenly approached the vehicle moving car. As it made its way past, the lights from inside briefly penetrated the vehicle. She was described feeling a bump against the side of the road car, while feeling a sensation like electric shock in her neck. Simultaneously, left-hand side headlight went out. The object would cut back away again, and then maintain its distance before vanishing. Slowly after returning home, however, Madonna would again feel very ill for the rest of the evening. Military denial connection to Mr. Griffin. 2 days later, her second account on the 10th of November, 1966, Diana's father would contact Flight Lieutenant Williams at RAF Shrewsbury. He wished to know if the military shed any light on an incident following along the A5 that left his daughter frightened by the object in the sky. This was, he reported, then burn marks on the left side of his daughter's car, proving that something was somewhat certainly off over the road that evening. A letter dated 11th of November would arrive at the folks' home on the 14th. It informed them that no service aircraft had been flying in the area. Time and instant. Not that Diana seriously considered the military as being behind the bizarre sightings, though she wasn't sure exactly what she'd seen. She believed it was probably connected to another local resident, Mr. Griffin. According to her and Diana, and many other terms, but Mr. Griffin was reported to have made contact with the occurrence of these bizarre objects. Furthermore, there were some who claimed he and some got inside the otherworldly vehicles. Further still, the contacts of Mr. Griffin taking place in the same bridge where Diana witnessed the glowing disc. The incident remains unexplained. However, far from the only UFO sighting in the region of the United Kingdom. One of the earliest recorded UFO sightings in Shropshire occurred in September 1912, on an evening special company of Phillips, along with his mother, witnessed an orange bottle globe-shaped object in the skies over Strathmore Hill. It would hang motionlessly for some time before eventually disappearing. In August 1963, just over a year before the first of Diana Folks' sightings, Kevin Bing reported seeing a green fireball in the early hours. So bright was the object outside that it woke from sleep to find his entire room bathed in green wash. It would then put the object remained in light sight for 5 seconds before suddenly vanishing from the sky. UFO sightings in the support region seemed to explore the late 1990s and continue abundance today. Many reports describe upper triangular crafts with lights on each corner, glowing circular crafts. Many reports also speak of yellow, orange or even white lights. Activity over the area of United Kingdom is beyond doubt. For the most part, though, there are sightings of faraway craft. 2 cases in the summer of 1981. Alien abductions on the M85 at 1981. Perhaps one of the strangest encounters took place on the evening of 16th of July 1981. Three friends, Rosemary Hawkins, Viv Hayward and Valerie Walters, were driving home from Salisbury to Ilford. When each of them noticed strange lights overhead, Viv, who was driving, would increase her speed. It was soon apparent the lights were following the vehicles. They would head towards Telford's police station to report the sighting. It was only when they arrived that they discovered a 20-minute journey taking them just short of an hour. All three were convinced something had happened during the half an hour or so. They couldn't remember so much so that all three agreed to under hypnotic regression. Accounts of floating towards a metallic object, as well as 4-foot aliens with robotic voices, were practically identical. As for the drawings they produced, perhaps one of the most interesting details was all that they described feeling big and clumsy, maybe suggesting a drastic altering in their perception, astrophysic conditions, or even their reality. Over 4 days later came another almost identical case that occurred in almost the same location, referred to as only Tom. Main witnesses travelling along the same point in 85 as for 3 disco goers. As he did, a very strange light lit up the sky in 3 shops, which was just above Tom. Described the craft as looking like a double-decker bus, all illuminated. It remained motionless for some time. Then a blue light emerged from the underground side of the craft, reached towards the ground, turning a shade of green as it did. The next thing Tom knew, the craft was speeding out of sight, electrifying pace. It was then he realized 3 hours had gone by. The forgotten Cosworth UFO incident. On the evening of the 10th, 1963, a little after 11:30 p.m., a craft seemingly from another world partially landed on the grounds of RAF Cosworth. What's more, the incidents were witnessed by several personnel, at least according to the rapidly increasing rumours. The military didn't do themselves any favours either by putting out continually contradicting statements to the press. One was stating that nothing at all had even occurred. Another said the sighting was mistake due to 2 drunken apprentices. Yet another claimed the incident to be nothing but a hoax, while another would claim a steamy train responsible for unmistakable claims of UFO landing. Not surprising, many UFO community begin to ask who the UK military had to hide. This is Area 51. You've been listening to the A5 UFO encounters of Diana Folks. Area 52, Tony Dodd's UFO sighting has sparked an alien investigator. Tony Dodd is quite rightly still viewed as one of the leading UFO investigators in the UK. Ever since his death in 2009. Not only for his influential critical in the organising of independent UFO research in the United Kingdom, his influence is global with the international reach of his observations. Don was not a lifelong UFO or space enthusiast. At the time of his first sighting in 1978, he was an all-future police sergeant, a highly respected one at that. Dodd would continue to see that these mysterious crafts hover during the last decade of service with the police. In 1988, he retired from the force and actively investigate UFO sightings full time. He would not become an expert in such encounters, but an alien abduction and sickly conspiracies that revolved around them. Incidentally, these sightings would result in Dodd capturing a photograph of the object, sent it for analysis at the Great Ground Saucer Watch in Arizona. The GCSW were largely viewed as genuine and credible, perhaps in part due to their having the nerve to take on the CIA in court over the freedom of information. This action has exposed many cover-ups to no longer be seen as just conspiracies. Dodd's photograph was not only confirmed to be genuine, with nil chance of being that, but hopes that also his distinction of being the first confirmed photograph of a UFO from the United Kingdom. In his opening chapter of his 1999 book, Alien Investigator, Dodd would write about the first time he's witnessed a UFO sighting. It was around 2:13 a.m. He was driving around the lonely roads of Skipton as part of his supervising the night patrols. He would most nights, he would head with him a beat officer who he picked up a short while back as much for company for himself as to give the beat officer some time off his feet. This particular night a call came over the phone police radio regarding a frantic housewife whose husband had not returned home. Her instincts had told him by the time he arrived at the property, the husband would be home, so all the worse for too many. A recent tongue lashing from his right angry wife. Even so, their duty band investigated the report. They returned the vehicle into a quiet country road as a shortcut to their destination, the village gunnery. The roads are narrow, and at one point the seat curves in them. Facing Dodd to keep his speed to maximum. At one of these curves, both men noticed a glow of light around the corner, as there were no buildings around this road. The policeman expected to see an oncoming vehicle. As they turned around the curve, each one was confronted with a massive disc, a dome shape of the dock. It also had small, round, dark potholes along the side, as well as skirting at the bottom. Dodd slammed the brakes on the police car. As the vehicle came to an abrupt stop, each man would now see clearly the underside of a disc. Dodd would write three half spears protruding from underneath a triangle visible. Dodd and the best new young beast officer opened their car doors and stood looking up at their fascinating craft. It moved about 20 miles per hour towards some woodland in the distance. From the vantage point, it seemed to be descend, and only now a glowing ball of white light was visible to each. Eventually, the two disappeared. After a moment of quiet contemplation, both men have turned their seats inside the car. After a quick discussion about the object might have been, Dodd started the engine. They drove forward, Dodd now in 2 miles, continuing his original destination or pursuing the strange craft. Of course, he could locate it. For several minutes, lights again came up in the distance. This time, it's headlights of another police car. As the police vehicle met, they stopped alongside each officer. Their driver's window winding down the rear windows. Did you see it? Came the search divided of the driver with another police car. Dodd informed him he had. Three police officers strange notes and ideas for going on their duties. Dodd would continue to investigate the missing husband, who was a suspect no longer missing, but continued to put his wife in his wife's good books. He returned to the station to make contact with Leeds Bradford and Manchester airports. Leeds Bradford radar was shut down in the night, and Manchester had no records of any unknown crafts. Dodd would continue his shift at finishing 6 p.m, but not able to put the sight in mind yet. Did you see it? Said the sighted voice of the police car. Dodd had phoned in the head. The three cars explained notes and ideas going on their duties. Dodd would continue to investigate the Mrs. Hubbard, was suspect, was no longer missing, but certainly not in his wife's good books. He returned to the station and made contact with Leeds Bradford Manchester Ports. Leeds Bradford radar was shut down at night, and Manchester had no records of the unknown crafts. Dodd would continue to his shift, finishing at 6 a.m, but unable to put the sighting out of his mind. Dodd would have many other sightings over this last decade, and with the police force, he would bring people with him at Elkhurst, were eager to see these strange appearances for themselves. Although Dodd didn't actively speak about his work, most close to him knew of his interests as well as his sightings. One time, for example, his son-in-law, Anthony Grant, who accompanied him in the Yorkshire Moors, they negotiated quiet country lanes, eventually arriving at a hill, where Dodd would direct the vehicle towards the. As he reached the top, a large cigar-shaped object filled the view. It was hovering silently and lit up and down the line of lights along its side. Dodd would state it was waiting for us. Two men stared in awe at the huge craft for several moments. Then a bright light emerged and it began to descend, eventually disappearing from light sight. Another occasion, this time, the two colleagues were pulled out in the mall late one night when they were around 3 or 4 hours and began to look at the nothing consequence would have taken place. Dodd would step outside the car to stretch his legs before planning on driving home for the night. He did so to immediately notice a huge craft hovering silently directly overhead. It was brightly lit by many colours like faint daylights of Christmas tree. died would state later. His two witnesses were vacated to the vehicle, and the three men stood watching an automated craft. On another occasion, two colleagues parked in Lake Moor, Lake McNein. They'd been around 3 to 4 hours before they began to look through nothing in congruence to take place. Dodd would step outside the car to stretch his legs before planning to drive home at night. As he did so, he immediately noticed a huge craft hovering slightly directly overhead. It was brightly lit in many colours like fairy lights on a Christmas tree. Dodd was late to stay. His two guests were vacated the vehicle, and all three men stood watching the overworldly craft for several moments. They then shot directly upwards at lightning pace and was gone. One bitterly cold morning, late 1968, a little after 4 a.m, Dodd would experience another sighting. On his usual patrol duties with a beat officer in the passenger seat, the police car was hampered by the fact it had been snowing incredibly heavily for several hours. Because of this, they focused at slow, low speed consistently as they travelled along the narrow and twisting roads. Suddenly, they appeared atop of them, many hills in the area. Both noticed a bright light in the farmer's field below them. Realising even the most ardent farmer wouldn't be out this time in the morning in the apparent river, Dodd brought the car to a stop and watched the light. Almost as soon as he did, the mysterious craft began to move, remaining low to the ground, shivering around the surface with the grace of a champion ice skater. As usual, there was no sound audible. Both men watched the object as it made its way over the fields, eventually disappearing into the ocean distance. Dodd would continue to drive out onto the moors, and just when he... Not just when his police duties called for him to do so, but quite normal for him to spend several hours, 4 or 5 times a week, sat watching the skies for an otherwise lonely spot in the north of England. Perhaps more importantly, he usually did see something that this Dodd began to realise was perhaps not coincidence. Perhaps whatever the intelligence was behind the crafted crafts, they were subconsciously calling him to the moors, with his hand, he decided he should attempt to make contact. Dodd would take to keeping a powerful torch in the glove box in his car at all times. Whenever he was in the moors, he would see the mysterious crafts. He would stop his car, flash his torch, the object, and attempt to create some form of basic communication and acknowledgement. One December morning in 1982, somewhere in the early hours between dusk, the acknowledgement came. That morning, Dodd and two friends, also with an interest in UFOs, were sitting in Dodd's parked car on top of the moors, each glass cup of coffee, intent to ward off the cold, braving the cold. Dodd opened the car door and stepped out to walk around for a moment or two. He let out the audible gasp as both brought out the two other men above them, a large black triangle object with small coloured lights and the shape of a diamond. The underside covered above them. The craft began to move upwards, prompting Dodd to reach inside the car and retrieve the torch. He quickly flicked it on and off several times before pointing it towards the craft. Then, much to his disbelief, the craft performed a sweeping U-turn, came back to where the man stood, and hovered for no less than 50 feet above them. He was so close that he could see the ripple effect operating mineral of the windows. He would liken them to the obscured grass look used in modern bathroom windows. When an amber beam of light was underside, changed from amber to white and black again. This repeated several times, and it felt a very obvious and underrated response to Dodd's signals. signals Dodd had been experiencing for several years already, its crease following the account of December 1982. They only reinforced the notion that it was not pure chance that Dodd was present when he appeared. But again, he wondered whether his decision to keep running to the returning to Mars was his or one placed in his mind by high intelligence. On the evening of the 7th, November 1983, Dodd and his wife, Pauline, during another account in Dodd's own words, like this evening, she largely viewed his sky watching as harmless hobby. A little before 8 p.m, they were driving towards Bolton Abbey and Eglinton. Pauline suddenly exclaimed in surprise, "My God, have you seen that?" Dodd had turned his attention to where his wife's gaze was. You see his craft overhead, for soon hundreds of tiny red lights. These crafts would pulse on and off simultaneously. As a married couple watched the craft, it squeaked down towards them. After passing closely over the top of the car, it made its way towards the free stop and ran along the side of the road. It was soon out of sight. Pauline would describe the object as similar to a child's spinning top, with certainly view her husband's sighting more significant than mere hobby. The craft would then emerge and go straight towards the still packed car. It's not travelling with speed, however, which gave Dodd ample time to reach up for the camera as he kept in the car. As it was moving towards their vehicle again, Dodd snapped several shots of the craft. It would be one of these pictures that GCW would confirm as being authentic and genuine. Tony Dodd's influence in the global UFO community remains, and his work is still valid, perhaps because he's not entered the UFO community and any perceived notions or even the interest in the subject combined with his valued skills as a police sergeant, while his work was most credible and valuable. Dodd, like several other researchers, believe part of the scientists were choosing of some kind. He would state that he would like to do this, have to do this thing, think about UFOs and that they happened to appear. As well as they went on, he believed a subtle topographic connection between him, intelligence between these strange crafts developed. He began to believe that their faults were not summoning him, or more, or it merely they were summoning me. Well, so you've been. Here's a little bit with Tony Dodd speaking for the mid 90s.
With one of these things when I was a working police officer, and I was on duty one night in 78 when me and a colleague actually had a confrontation with one of these things.
Where was this?
This was commonly near Skipton in North Yorkshire, and I was driving a police car, he was the observer, and we came round a bend in a country lane, and there was this thing sitting in the air in front of us. And it was absolutely stunning to see. It was a huge disc, about 100 feet in diameter, had a dome on the top of it, with what appeared to be portals, darkened portals around the dome. It had a skirting around the underside and coloured flashing lights, which were flashing on and off, almost like a neon sign effect. And there was three large globes or balls protruding from the underside. They were spaced evenly on the underside. I stopped the car and we got out. There was a very, very heavy static had come on the police car radio at that time. I don't know the cause of it. It may have been because of this thing was there, but it would be right to jump to conclusion. But this static suddenly set up on the radio, and I got out of the car, both of us did, and we stood there sort of open mouth looking at this thing. And it slowly moved away from us. Despite its enormous size, there was no sound coming from the damn thing. The only sound that we heard at that time was where it was displaced in the air when it started to move away from us. And the thing was, though, it was absolutely beautiful to look at it. I couldn't help remembering at the time, thinking, what kind of engineers put something like this together? Because it was absolutely extraordinary, it was. And that's what got me into the thing, because I was determined I was going to find out. I mean, I'd not so long been out of the RAF, and my last postings I'd been on Air Force bases where they were testing the very latest technology in aircraft. And at that time, the aircraft of the time which we were under test were the Lightning, because it was a Lightning station where I was on, and the Canberra. And that was our most advanced technology at the time. They were only testing them at that time, they test flying them. Now, this thing was years and years and years ahead of anything like that. It was no question about it at all. It was something that we hadn't got, and I knew it from the moment I saw it.
Skeptics and debunkers, of course, would continue to maintain that all such accounts of so-called alien abductions are foolish nonsense. How would you counter these?
Well, first of all, it was the skeptics and debunkers that said that the world was flat for 300 years, despite some of the top scientists of the time saying it was round. It's very, very easy for a skeptic or debunker to turn around and say to people who've done years and years of research, this is absolute rubbish. It's very, very easy. This is what they do all the time. And, of course, when we say, well, you prove to me that what I'm saying is rubbish, and they will turn around and say, well, it's not for us to prove that you're right. It's not for us to prove that you're wrong. It's for you to prove that you're right. And so we're always going to be faced with this thing. And as much information as you put before these people, they will do their best to pull it to pieces. But the facts are the facts. Particularly if we talk about things like alien abductions, where there's such a wide variety of people being involved in this, and I'm talking about highly intelligent people, and a great many who know nothing whatsoever about the subject. We're getting them all over the world, as you well know. People who are very, very backward are not in touch with the media and things like that, and they're telling the same stories. Now, is everybody imagining things? Is everybody making these things up? What are they to gain, particularly these sort of backward countries, by saying things like this? But that is not the point. It's the facts that point to abduction, and there are so many, many facts which are occurring repeatedly, which I'm absolutely convinced they're taking place.
Finally, there are people probably watching this interview and wondering, is this man for real? Are UFOs real? If you could look at that person right now, what would you say?
I would say, first of all, seek and you will find. But don't just condemn this subject without investigating it. It's very, very easy to turn around and condemn things just off the top of your head. We've put a lot of time and a lot of years into this investigation. And I can assure you, without any question of a doubt, that aliens are here, aliens have been here for a long time, and aliens are in contact with various elements of the military and other countries, diplomats. It wouldn't be prudent to me to say any more at this time, but if you can believe me if you wish, if you don't believe me, well, that's entirely up to you. But I gain nothing by saying these things. Only these are the things that I have uncovered during my investigations.
Hi, you've been listening to Area 52. The Tony Dodd UFO sighting that sparked an alien investigator.